Welcome to the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. Show notes, links, and contact details can be found at robnunphoto.com. That's www.robnunphoto.com. SCL is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network, and loads of other great tech podcasts can be found over at www.techpodcast.com. Now on with the show.
Hi and welcome to SCL, the Subject, Composition and Light Photography Podcast. My name's Rob from robnunphoto.com and this is my little audio diary about my journey through the wonderful world of photography. Well, it's the 15th of July 2012 here in Gosport on the south coast of the United Kingdom. We've actually had a sunny day today, can you believe it? Which is good because we had the Olympic torch come through town. And I was down taking a few frames as a young lad sprinted down the high street with a flame in his hand, much to the consternation of the assembled people where I was anyway, because it was all over in a flash. But more about that in a little bit. First of all, I'd like to welcome everybody to the podcast, especially if you've recently listened to the Photo Netcast episode I was on with Antonio Marks and Sean Calwraith. And if you heard what I was saying there and kind of thought, hello, I'd like to listen to this guy a little bit longer, and came over to robnunphoto.com and subscribed, or just downloaded one of the podcasts to listen to, welcome and enjoy. On the Photo Netcast episode, it was all about film and film cameras, but that's not what I'm all about. Although I enjoy shooting film, and buying lots of different film cameras from the local car boots, I shoot mostly digital on my Canon 350D digital SLR, mainly due to cost constraints, to be honest, because I am the skint photographer, the skint podcaster, yes, and the beauty, I can go out, for example, today and take, you know, 300 shots. 300? No, about 90 shots, actually. Come back, do a little bit of editing and get them uploaded to share. Obviously, to do that with film, I could do that with film, but the actual cost of the film might be a little bit prohibitive. So there we go. So if you're new to the podcast, you'll hear lots of digital, lots of stuff about film, but mostly about what I've been up to, and maybe some of the things that I've learnt through the mistakes I've made, or investigations I've done and research, that can help you with your photography as well. So what I've been up to this week? Well, if you've got a Google Android phone, especially one of the Nexus ones, you could be getting the Jelly Bean update over the next few days. So I talked about getting the, what's the phone I've got now? I've got the Samsung Galaxy Nexus, which is one of the Google Experience phones. So it's just a vanilla version of Android. It did have Ice Cream Sandwich on the operating system, but just updated to Jelly Bean. And I tell you what, it is absolutely brilliant. The phone is so fast now. I didn't really think it was slow before. You know, I after moving up from the HTC Desire, I thought, I thought the Galaxy Nexus is like a proper phone. It's a lot bigger. Feels like a mean piece of equipment, but now it's so slick, it's brilliant as you're flicking around. But this isn't a phone podcast, it's a photography one, but yeah, really, really good. So talking of car boots, that was a bit of a seamless transition, wasn't it? Car boot this morning at last, although it was throwing it down yesterday and last night. There was quite a few cars at the car boot down in Bridgemary, and me and Suzanne went along at about 6:30 this morning, and there wasn't that much on display, to be honest. The supply of SLRs has definitely dried up a lot, but maybe it's just because there's been so much rain, there's been no decent car boots. But what I did get my hands on as you know it's true, one of my favourite little compacts, Olympus Trip 35, the king of compacts, really. Well, it's a toss-up between the Olympus Trip 35 and the Mew 2 or the Stylus Epic, I think. But for me, the beauty of the Trip 35 is the fact that it doesn't need a battery. It's always ready to shoot. And I picked this one up for a five. And it was a typical thing. You know, you go up to the stall, I saw it. You can say, I can spot Trip 35s at 50 yards now. You see them go, all right. And the first thing you do, when you pick up an Olympus Trip 35, look at the lens, put it onto automatic, where it does the exposure. Wind it on. Put your hand over the front of the lens and the light cell that's over the front and press the button. And the first indication that it's a good one is that the shutter won't click. A little red plastic see-through, or well, translucent tongue should pop up in the viewfinder. And that tells you that the night meter's probably working, because if there isn't enough light, the camera won't let you take a photograph unless you flick it to manual mode. And then the next trick you do is you put the camera up to some light on automatic mode, and you press the shutter, and then you sort of aim it down a little bit away from the light, and hopefully you should be able to see the aperture blades closing to different diameters as it adjusts the f-stops of the camera. If it doesn't, it means it's a little bit stuck, and that could be a problem. But generally, if you can cover the lens and you get that little red button to pop up, and then you obviously look at the lens, it's not full of fungus, and look through the viewfinder, and pop back open, make sure nothing big dents in it, it's probably worth buying. And obviously for a fiver, this one was definitely worth buying. And it's one of the older models with the chrome shutter release button. I didn't buy it, I would have bought it anyway. So that goes into my collection. I think I've got two working ones that are in pretty good condition now. And I've got one where the lens feels like it's about to fall off, and then I think I've got two that aren't working, that need stripping apart and re-lubing to get the shutter. What happens is the aperture blades stick, and therefore the automatic exposure system can't work. But if you do see an Olympus Trip 35, you know, and it's going cheap, pick them up, because they're great for shooting with film. So this week's main topic was the Olympic flame coming to Gosport. As you know, UK 2012 London Olympics, and then as a prelude to that, the Olympic torch is goes round the whole of the country in this relay. Now, I assumed before I watched something on TV was that it was a proper like running relay with athletes. Another part of it is a bit like that. The torch doesn't run everywhere. It travels in cars, trains, planes, to get different places. And when it gets to like towns and stuff, local people or celebrities or people who have earned it get to run with the torch for a bit. And Gosport was chosen to be one of the towns the torch runs through. And I must admit, I didn't know it was today until a few days ago. I thought it was tomorrow. And we got something on tomorrow, so I thought we'd have to do it. But I found out it was today, and I thought, ooh, that could be a good photo opportunity, couldn't it? And I got a little bit excited as well. So what I thought I'd do would be kind of go through some of my thought processes about my planning for this photojournalist experience, with myself as the commissioning editor, go and get some shots. And maybe so you could think about these things too. So the first thing I did was I went on the relevant website and checked the route that the flame was going to be taking. And kind of had to think about what would be a good viewing point for the torch as it was going past. And as it was just going down a street, I knew what I wanted in terms of shots was not just the torch going along, but some of the build-up of it as well, the crowds and things. I thought probably the biggest crowds are going to be down in the town centre. So I thought, right, down on the high street, because the high street in Gosport is pedestrianised. And I thought, right, so I'll see if I can get down there. And then really it was, wherever I could get parked close to, and then go there. But then I was thinking, right, vantage point, do I want to be up as close as I can, or do I want to come back? As it turned out, I got a space next to the rail and sort of stood there. It wasn't the best point, but I'll get to that bit in a minute. But I was kind of trying to go over my head, right, where would be the best background be to take photographs against? But there was one thing that I maybe could have thought about at the time that I didn't, was a bit stuck, really, was where the sun was coming from. Because as it turned out, and if you go to robnanphoto.com and see the show notes for show 199, you'll see that I'll put the one picture that I got of the runner as he was going past. I got about four or five, but it's kind of the best of a bad bunch of this one when he's going past me. The sun is up and behind him, shining on his back. So his face was a little bit underexposed, his back was overexposed, so it wasn't the best place. So maybe I could have, actually think about it, I probably couldn't have found a better place to shoot him, because if I'd been on the other side, I would have been probably shooting into the sun, which would have meant that it could have been very tricky. The subject would have been backlit, I would have probably underexposed him horrendously, so then I would have probably had to go to either spot metering mode and spot meter off him, or go to manual mode and meter off some people and do it that way. But that would have been more complicated. And when I tell you the story of what actually happened, you'll see that it all happened pretty quick. But anyway, so I checked the map, thought about where I could park the car, and then thought about, you know, what shots I would want to get. So the crowd, the build-up, colours, flags. Initially, I thought I would get some vehicles as well, but they obviously didn't come down the pedestrianised bit. And I thought, right, what lenses am I going to use, you know, for these shots? I thought, well, the telephoto lens, zooms in general, but the longer zooms are great for compressing a scene. And so they make things look closer together. So they're great for shots like of a runner coming towards you, because it means that it looks like the background, like the people are watching, are really close. And the other beauty of using telephoto zooms, longer zooms, is that they give you a small depth of field as well, so you can get the runner in focus, but get the background nice and blurred. But I also knew that once the runner got closer, I would have to go wide angle to get them in. So I was thinking about that as well. So what I did was I went to get a feel of perhaps how it would work, I watched some of the BBC coverage of the torch earlier in the day as it was going along. And unlike the torchbearer in Gosport, it appeared that most of the torchbearers were jogging along fairly sedately to enjoy, I guess, the experience and to wave to the crowd as they were going along. So I thought, well, I've probably got enough time. What I had in my mind was I could envision me, say, on the barrier, seeing the runner with they run with like these police guards coming towards me, and then I would have my telephoto zoom on my camera, and I would be click 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 clicking away. And then when he or she got a little bit closer, I'd whip the telephoto off, go to the standard zoom, the 18-55, and shoot. And as they were coming past, I would then get those wide shots. But then what I thought I would do is, as they were getting really close, I would switch to shutter priority instead of aperture priority, go to a 60th of a second, and pan with the runner. So hopefully I might be able to get a couple of shots where the runner was kind of sharpish, but the background was blurred. So, you know, that was how I saw it kind of panning out. And then maybe I would then flick back to the telephoto zoom to follow the runner as they disappeared into the distance and get some crowd shots. As it turned out, things happened way too fast for me to be able to do that. But that was the kind of the pre-visualization of what I had. I checked the weather as well, seeing if it was going to rain. It said it might do, so I thought, right, I'll make sure I wear a raincoat anyway, and I can always tuck my camera underneath. And I was taking my LowPro photo runner bag as well. I checked my camera and make sure the batteries are all charged up, both of them. I've just lost the battery, so I didn't lose it, it kind of gone duff. Might have to do a post about that on the website, actually, about how if you think you're going to use your camera for a number of years, say for example my 350D must be 6 or 7 years old now, the problem you have with lithium ion batteries is eventually they die. And I guess at some point I'm not going to be able to buy replacement lithium ion batteries, because, you know, like all manufacturers, Canon change the design every couple of years. But what I have got is a battery grip, and the battery grip comes with a special holder that you can put AAs into, so I can use that. Not that I use the battery grip, because I think it makes the camera a little bit too big. But anyway, so anyway, charge up the battery, clean the lens, clean the LCD screen, make sure the card that's in there is formatted, and I've got my spare cards, and just go through the wife checklist, which is white balance. It was a bit of a grey day, so I thought set it to shady. And I've talked about this before, where so instead of you, the problem with using auto white balance when you're out and about during the day outside is that the camera is constantly changing your white balance to custom settings, or between say shady and sunny and stuff. And the problem with that is every single picture is slight, the colours in it can be slightly different. Whereas if you stick to say the cloudy or the shade white balance, you have this consistency across all your photographs, so that if you've got to do a big change like a colour shift on a lot of photographs, you can do them all at the same time because they'll all be out by the same amount. Whereas if you're in auto white balance, they'll all be out differently. You'll have to adjust them individually, which can take a long time. So anyway, white balance onto shade. I is for ISO. I put it at 400. Because I thought, you know, if I'm shooting long telephotos in the, and it's a bit overcast, even with image stabilization on the 55 to 250, you know, I want to keep my shutter speed up. And if I'm shooting ISO 400, that would keep it up sort of 500th of a second. But so about 200, ready to switch to 400. Focus. With the focus, what I did was I started off on single focus, but then I went on to AI servo. So that the camera would track the torchbearer as they were coming towards me, and E for exposure, and for that basically I go to aperture priority mode and set the f-stop to normally a couple of stops up from wide open, and on zooms that have variable apertures, so as you zoom in and out, the f-stop effectively is changing. It's normally round about sort of f8, f5.6. So when I'm at wide angle, instead of being at f3.5, I'm at f5.6. And then when I'm all zoomed all the way, when it's at f5.6, I'm actually at f8. And the reason why you do that is to be closer to the sweet spot of the lens, because all lenses are never as sharp as they can be when they're wide open, when you're at the biggest hole, if you like, the biggest f-stop number. The smallest f-stop number, like f3.5. So by closing down the aperture bit, you add a bit of sharpness. And I know, especially with the 55 to 250 Canon IS lens, that is it's a fantastic lens. It really is. The pictures on it are so sharp, and the contrast is so nice. And I think some of this as well might be the fact that I'm now using the lens hood with that particular long zoom, and the lens hood is massive, so it's really protecting the optics from light coming in at a bit of a funny angle. So I went through the wide checklist, and then I thought, well, you know, I've got the Trip 35. Why don't I pop that in my, put some colour film in it, pop it in my pocket, because I really need to test it over the next month or so. Pop that in my pocket, so we're good to go with that. And then I thought about the settings I would be using again, so it would be aperture priority most of the time, couple of stops up from wide open, but ready to go to shutter speed, shutter priority, or TV mode on Canon cameras, 60th of a second to do a little bit of panning to see if we could get a sense of movement. So here we go. So then it got to sort of 4 o'clock. I knew the torch was coming into Gosport about 5 and doing sort of stuff. So about 4:20, I jumped in the car, which was probably a little. It was probably a little bit. I could have probably come a little bit later, but anyway, it enabled me to get to near the high street, park the car, walk down to the high street, and I sort of had a bit of a scout around of where I was. And originally, I sort of started off on these steps outside this shop, but then there was a lamppost in front. I thought, well, that'd get in the way, so I moved up, and then there was lots of spaces still in front of the barriers that were like separating the road from the pedestrians who were watching, so I thought, oh, I might as well get up against the barrier. But then I had to wait for ages. It was about 45 minutes before the torch barrier finally turned up. So in that time, I was just using the zoom to take some distant shots of the crowds, and the people, you know, trying to get flags in, and the various characters that were walking around, like police officers and people selling items and food and that sort of stuff. And generally just kind of wasting time. So, and I did a bit of practicing as well, sort of swapping between the 55 to 250 and the 17 to 55, you know, just to see if I could do it quickly. And I thought, yeah, it'd be all right. So my original plan of using the 55 to 250 kind of went out the window a little bit, because where I was standing, it was getting crowded, more crowded and more crowded. So it was quite difficult to lean out and look down. But also there was a slight curve to the road, which meant that I couldn't see that far into the distance. And I kind of thought, I'm not probably going to have enough time to switch between the 55 to 250. So I might as well just stick with the 17 to 55 and play it by ear then. A marching band went past the other way. And so I took the opportunity to take some pictures of those. And then it was just waiting around, really, just taking some more tests. Till finally, these people started running past. So there was a couple of police officers running along looking a bit sweaty, and then all these like photographers are running along as well, obviously to get ahead of the torchbearer to take some pictures. And then the torchbearer came, and it was this young lad, and he, fair dues, you know, and he was giving it his all. You know, he wasn't jogging, he wasn't taking his time, he was running with that torch. So I think it would have been nice if maybe he'd just been going a little bit slower for everybody who'd been watching, and maybe he could have savoured the moment, if you like, a little bit more. But he kind of sprinted along. So I didn't get a chance to do that many shots. In fact, I was kind of stuck in aperture priority mode, and I just blasted him. You know, I was on continuous shooting, so well, it's 3 frames a second, 3.5 frames a second, I think, on the 350D. So I got as many as I could. As he came past, as the sort of little kid next to me was waving her sort of flag in front of my camera lens, and I got some shots. I got sort of one half decent shot of him coming past. And I've got lots of other shots that I will upload to Flickr and share in a separate post over the next week or so. But I got one, but looking at it, you know, I kind of froze them his motion, but the background is frozen as well. Because it's a kid who's holding the torch, I'm looking down on him a little bit, so maybe what I should have done was drop down a little bit further to get a bit of a better perspective. But it kind of, I learnt lots of things in the sort of this brief time. One was that position is everything, you know. I got myself in a situation where I was up against the barrier and all these people came around and I didn't really have much moon room to manoeuvre. And I know when you're not an official photographer at an event, you know, what are you going to do? I can't jump the barrier and start shooting from the hip that way. But maybe I could have, there was some flower pot type things a little bit further up where perhaps I could have stood on them and that would have given me a better view towards the runner as he was coming along. And anyway, if I chose a better position where I could see further down the road, that would have given me a more opportunity to get the shot as he was coming along. And then when I saw the fact that he was smaller, I should have crouched down and taken some shots there. But overall, it was great fun, and I sort of jumped back in the car, zoomed back home to see Suzanne, and enjoyed the experience, definitely. So hopefully, maybe some of those things I've talked about will inspire you to, if you're going out to photograph something, just to think about these things in advance, to avoid the problem where you don't miss the shot. Ah, that's a nice cup of coffee. Well, that's about it for this week. I'd like to thank everybody over in the Flickr group. And if you've just come over from PhotoNetcast, what we have is, if you're already on Flickr, just search the groups for robnumphoto.com and you'll find our one. Or if you're not on Flickr, go over to robnumphoto.com and on the right hand side there's a link to it. And you can go over, you can check out the Flickr group. Join for free, obviously. And what we do is every couple of months we have a new photo assignment. And this month's one is angles and shutter speeds. And it's all for fun. And the idea is you just take as many photos as you like on the subject of angles, so that might be architecture, people, whatever you want, and playing around with shutter speeds, probably maybe longer shutter speeds this time to get the sense of movement and stuff like that. There's some great photos over there already of different work people have done with some great angles, and then using shutter speeds to infer movement and motion into photographs as well. Thanks to everybody for posting their photos to the Flickr group as well. And thanks to Everyday Jones, who do the intro and outro music for the podcast. Remember, my name's Rob from robnonphoto.com. You can email me, scalespeeder@gmail.com. Or you can just go over to robnonphoto.com and look at the contact details there. But most of all, I'd like to thank you for downloading and listening to the podcast. And hopefully, pretty soon, I'll see you on Flickr.